always am appreciative of the people that I call on to lead the prayer as we start, because they don't know they're going to get called on, and I know that I can always depend on them. We're doing the Jacob and Joseph, the last chapter and a half of Genesis tonight. It's kind of a happy story and a couple of sad stories interwoven. And speaking of interweaving, you know, I always like to do the history and the religious aspect and try to bring all of that together. I have done a considerable amount of reading this week just on Egyptian history and Egyptology to try to bring something to you that you may not know that interacts with the story that's being told through the biblical verse that we have been assigned tonight. As last week, I probably will not go through the questions, each one, but as we get into the discussion of this, for the most part, you will find those answers. And I'm assuming that the great majority of you have already filled out those the questions or the answers to the questions to begin with. I'd like to, if you would, read with me Genesis 49, beginning with verse 28, and we'll read the rest of the chapter, verse 49. Pardon me if I sound a little choked up, because I am. All these are the 12 tribes of Israel, and that is what their father spoke to them, and he blessed them. He blessed each one according to his own blessing. Then he charged them and said to them, I am to be gathered to my people. Bury me with my fathers in the cave that is in the field of Ephron the Hittite, in the cave that is in the field of Machpelah, which is before Mamre in the land of Canaan, which Abraham bought with the field of Ephron the Hittite as a possession for a burial place. There they buried Abraham and Sarah, his wife. There they buried Isaac and Rebekah, his wife. And there I buried Leah. The field and the cave that is there were purchased from the sons of Heth. And when Jacob had finished commanding his sons, he drew his feet up into the bed and breathed his last and was gathered to his people. Wow. I feel so sorry for Jacob. Why do I feel sorry for Jacob? He's done everything that God wanted him to do. He's led his people the way God wanted him to lead his people. But yet there's a little tiny bit of compassion that I have for him in these verses. Can anybody tell me what I might be looking at? Your class. Okay, then.
One thing, he started out in Canaan, but he didn't make it back.
He started out in Canaan, but he didn't make it back to Canaan. Okay. Who did he start out in Canaan with?
One of his wives, genuinely married, that was Leah, his favorite wife.
Whoop. Flip that. Pardon? Who was his favorite wife?
Rachel.
He started out with Rachel, his favorite wife, if you will, and she dies on the way to Egypt. Right? What happens to Rachel's body? It's kind of like buried her beside the road, because nobody had the aptitude that the Egyptians had in order to prepare their people for burial. And so you didn't carry people around with you. This is not like what's the good Western that I like, honey? Lonesome Dove. We're not going to bring old Gus all the way from Montana all the way back to South Texas. It's just not going to happen. So he has to bury Rachel in what is near what we would be called Bethlehem today. Is where she's buried. So he go when Jacob is preparing to die, he gathers his family around him, and he says, it's about time for me to go. We've been looking for this time. I want you to take me to this property that Abraham bought and prepared. He's buried there. Sarah's buried there. Isaac's buried there. Rebekah's buried there. And Leah, his second favorite wife, is buried there. And so he's going there to be buried, and he's not going to be able to be buried with Rachel. I just find that heartbreaking. I mean, he worked so hard for her. Was it like 14 years? Something like that? 7 years and then 7 more years? I mean, I wouldn't work that hard for my wife. I like worked a year, you know? 14 years. And so that kind of answers questions 1 and 2. If you're not there yet, what promise did Jacob extract from his sons? That he would be buried in Machpelah, who has been buried in that tomb. And I just gave you that. Considering Jacob's history with his wives, what is surprising about who is buried there? It's Leah and not Rachel. I just wish they could all be there together. But that's not the plan. So that kind of finishes up chapter 49. Now, the author of this book is going to ask you, well, what does that say to the wandering Jews in the wilderness? How does that help them? What does that do for them? That Jacob wants to go back. He wants to get out of Egypt, right? He does not want to be buried in Egypt. And later on, we're going to see the same thing about Joseph. Particularly as regards or in regards to Joseph's death, he is prepared much the same way that Jacob is going to be prepared. And his bones, or he's going to be put in a coffin. Correct? Is that what you got out of your lesson this week? But it doesn't say he's put in the ground or put in a cave or anything. It says he's put in a coffin. So I don't know what if there's anything to that or not. Let's start with verse 1 of chapter 50 now. Then Joseph fell on his father's face and wept over him and kissed him. I might throw in here, I don't know, I can't remember, it's been a number of years ago now that where I read something about this, but it was they kissed the dead as a tribute to them, to show the amount of love and respect that they had for them, and you know, we still do that today in some regard. But the Egyptians believed that the soul of a man or a woman escaped through the mouth when they died. And so they would hover near their head when they died, because that was the way that they could hope to see the soul leaving the body. I find that kind of weird. I don't think you can be able to see that, but I'm pretty sure you can't. But anyway, he wept over him and kissed him. Verse 2, and Joseph commanded his servants, the physicians, to embalm his father, so the physicians embalmed Israel. Now, this is a long and drawn-out process. The Egyptians mourned their leaders for 72 days. Tells you how much respect that they had for Jacob / Israel, that they would mourn him for 70 days. And the reason it took 70 days is because it took 40 days for the embalming process to be completed. It was not what we think of today when we speak of embalming. Funny story, when Harriet and I first moved to Ennis, I was from Alabama. I don't think we even embalmed them there. We just put them in the ground. Anyway, when we first moved to Ennis, she was pointing out, here's a Ennis Daily News that used to be the old mortuary. And over a period of time, I got to be friends with people who owned the newspaper, And they carried me in the back, and sure enough, they had these bars hanging overhead that were still there, that and these big heavy rings and hooks, and you look down at the floor, and they had drain places down there, and that's where they did, you know, they would just hang them upside down and cut a part of their body and just let the flow of gravity release all the blood from the body, and then they would put something in there to cure them, so to speak. It's not the way the Egyptians did it. The Egyptians would remove the brain through the... They would remove the organs, and they would replace the organs with frankincense and myrrh and other spices. And then they were left in a vat, if you will, for a long time, so that they were, for lack of a better word, pickled, which is the reason for the 40 days of embalming that it took in order to be able to do that. Not a very pretty sight, I agree with you, but it gives us that period of time. So of the 70 days of mourning, 40 days of that was the embalming, and then the 30 days of mourning that the Israelites gave to Jacob or anyone that was who had died. Says in verse 3, 40 days were required for him, for such are the days required for those who are embalmed, and the Egyptians mourned for him for 70 days. Now when the days of his mourning were past, Joseph spoke to the household of Pharaoh, saying, "If now I have found favor in your eyes, please speak in the hearing of Pharaoh, saying." And he goes on to ask that he might be able to leave and take some of his people with him and take him back for burial. I find it kind of interesting here that Joseph, being as high up in the Egyptian hierarchy as he was, actually sent someone or talked to the household of Pharaoh instead of going directly to Pharaoh himself to ask of this favor. And we see this repeated later on when the brothers approach Joseph. So anyway, verse 5, it says, "My father made me swear, before I am dying in my grave, which I dug for myself in the land of Canaan, there you shall bury me. Now, therefore, please let me go up and bury my father, and I will come back." And Pharaoh said, "Go up and bury your father as he made you swear." All kind of right by the book, doing everything. Everything is going just as planned. So Joseph went up to bury his father, and with him, look at this, all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and all the elders of the land of Egypt. Now, the only people apparently that were left behind, and I don't know how many Jews are left. I mean, I don't know how many there are. They've been, how long has Jacob been in Egypt? Say it. Thank you. Been in Egypt for 17 years. So he's 147 years old when he dies. He was 130 when he went. He's been there 17 years. And throughout this period of time, the 17 years, the Israelites have continued to propagate and have children, and more children, more children. And their flocks and herds are all expanding and growing. So all of these people now, except for the ones who are tending to that, tending to the small children who are not going to go on a trip, are loading up. We're going back. And apparently Pharaoh has absolutely no problem with this, because you understand now, Joseph is the second in line to the throne. I mean, he's not going to get the throne because he's not of that lineage, but he is like the prime minister, if you will. He's the governor. He's one of those who controls everything for Pharaoh. He has no problem allowing them to leave Egypt, the land of Goshen, if you will, the people of Israel, and going to Canaan. And he knows they're going to come back. Why are they going to come? How does he know they're going to come back? They left their herds and their little ones. They're not going to leave them, so they know they're going to come back. But not only that, it's not a point of, does he trust them enough to let them go and to come back? But it's a matter of respect, not only for Joseph, but for Jacob as well, that he allows them to go, and not only allows them to go, but he sends a whole army of people, of his own people, the Egyptian people, sends them with them. Why do you suppose that is? Why do you suppose he sent? Showing respect. What else? I'm sorry?
Safe passage, perhaps.
Absolutely. Safe passage. Never know who you're going to run into along the way. So they're acting as kind of a militia, kind of a guard, if you will, to allow them safe passage. So in verse 7, Joseph went up to bury his father with him and all the servants of Pharaoh, the elders of his house, and the elders of the land of Egypt. In verse 8, as well as all the house of Joseph, his brothers, and his father's house, only their little ones, their flocks, and their herds they left in the land of Goshen. And there went up with him both chariots and horsemen, and it was a very great gathering. Then they came to the threshing floor of Atad, which is beyond the Jordan, and they mourned there with a great and very solemn lamentation. What's a lamentation? Great grief or sorrow. You read of rending their clothes, tearing their clothes, ashes, that kind of thing. This threshing floor, what's a threshing floor?
Where they separate the wheat. Where they separate the wheat from the chaff.
Wheat from the chaff, or chaff, if you're from Texas. And then wait for a wind to blow the chaff away, I guess. Yes, sir. Yeah, they actually use baskets. A woven type thing. They would throw it up in the air, and what would happen to the chaff? Blow away, and the seed would fall down. Absolutely. And they used mules or oxen or whatever to tread out. To walk down walking paths, and most of these threshing floors were circles, and they had a big kind of gear in the middle that the oxen were attached to, and they would just walk them around and around in circles, and the hoof beats would beat it down and separate the chaff from the seed, and then women would kind of scoop it up and put it in their baskets and throw it up in the air. So imagine this circle, if you will, but it's a great threshing floor. And they would even gather when they met to lament someone like Joseph, or like Jacob, for a long period of time, and it's not just an overnight deal. They would even gather brambles. Does anybody know what a bramble is? What?
Briars.
Thorns. Thorns? Yeah. Kind of like a bull rush or whatever. Anyway, just enter. Think of prism where you have the concertina wire at the top of the fences and everything, that where people can't get in and can't get out. These brambles were encircled these threshing floors to keep out the wild animals and everything, and they would build fires in the middle, and they would spend sometimes even days there mourning those that had passed away. In verse 11, and when the inhabitants of the land, the Canaanites, saw the mourning at the threshing floor of Atad, they said, This is a deep mourning of the Egyptians. Therefore, its name was called Abel Mizraim, which is beyond the Jordan. Notice the Canaanite people here are recognizing this group of people in mourning as Egyptians. They didn't recognize anybody else. Correct? They thought they were Egyptians. Well, if I was from Canaan and I ran into a band of Egyptians in Canaan or near Canaan, what would be my number one question? What are you doing here? What are you doing here? Verse 12. So his sons did for him just as he had commanded them. For his sons carried him to the land of Canaan and buried him in the cave of the field of Machpelah before Mamre, which Abraham bought with the field from Ephron the Hittite as property for a burial place. And after he had buried his father, Joseph returned to Egypt, he and his brothers and all who went up with him to bury his father. Okay. And that is basically the end of Jacob. And we pick up now with the story of the remnant of Jacob's family, which is Joseph and his brothers. And what is the first problem that arises with those, with that remnant? Yeah, Joseph's brothers are afraid now that Jacob is dead that they're going to try to get, that he's going to try to get back at them. Do you think that's a correct thinking on their part? What would not? Not a correct thinking? Human nature to do that, I would think. Because the protector is gone. Jacob is dead and gone. And so they're thinking, okay, well, you know, daddy's gone. He is the guy that was making sure that, that our relationship with Joseph was good. And now he's gone. So what is Joseph going to do to us now? Because look how powerful he is. But there is the one thing that Joseph knows that the brothers don't know. And that is, it's not what Joseph wanted, it's what God wanted. And so this takes us back, way back, to Joseph's childhood now. Because if God did not want Joseph to be sold by his brothers, he would not have been. And so there is a big what if number of questions. And I want to spend the rest of the time tonight looking at what if. And I want you to try to fill in the blanks, okay? Because this takes us all the way through to to Christ, from Genesis to Christ. If Joseph's brothers never sell him to the Midianites, then Joseph never goes where? To Egypt. Right. And if Joseph never goes to Egypt, he is never sold to whom? Potiphar. Right. And if he's never sold to Potiphar, Potiphar's wife never falsely accuses him of rape. And if Potiphar's wife never falsely accuses him of rape, then he's never put in prison. Right? And if he's never put in prison, he never beats the baker, the butler, or the candlestick maker of Pharaoh. And if he never meets the baker and the butler of Pharaoh, he never interprets their dreams. And if he never interprets their dreams, he never gets to interpret Pharaoh's dreams. And if he never gets to interpret Pharaoh's dream, he's never made prime minister. And if he's never made prime minister, he never wisely administrates for the severe famine coming upon the region. And if he never wisely administrates for the famine, then his family back in Canaan perishes from the famine.
Among everybody else.
Among everybody else. And if his family back in Canaan perishes from the famine, then the Messiah can't come from a dead family. And if the Messiah can't come, then Jesus never came. And if Jesus never came, then you are dead in your sins and without hope in the world. Ain't that something? You know, I love to read. But I don't think I could write a book that is so cohesive in what God is doing here. It's that old God had a plan. Now I had to write this down because I can't remember it all. I know all the events, but I can remember what happened 50 years ago, but I can't remember yesterday, right, Sherman? God had a plan. So now we go back to Joseph and his brothers. And when his brothers look to him and say, okay, our protector is gone, what is Joseph going to do about us now? Will he have hard feelings toward us? Will he hold us up for the things that we have done to him? So what do they do? Again, they're good. I don't know who's leading this band, but they're good. But not only do they make up a story, but they get somebody else to deliver it. Because they can... That's right. But go back to the famine. When they go down to Egypt and see what Joseph does and go down and... Is that all of y'all? No, we got one more at home. We'll send him down here too. You see, it's kind of that flying ointment type thing that they're not going to approach Joseph because they're afraid of what he's going to do to them. So they send someone else. In verse 17, and thus you shall say to Joseph, and this is the messengers, you will say to him, I beg you, please forgive the trespass of your brothers and their sin, for they did evil to you. What do we call that?
Now we call it repentance.
We call it repentance, don't we? We call it, it's a confession of guilt on their part. Now please forgive the trespass of the servants of the God of your father. And Joseph wept when they spoke to him. Verse 18, then his brothers also went and fell down before his face, and they said, behold, we are your servants. And Joseph said to them, do not be afraid, for am I not in the place of God? But as for you, you meant evil against me, but God meant it for good. And this goes back to when they threw him in the pit and they sold him before he went into Egypt. They meant evil for him, and he is an innocent lamb. Do you see the connection there? Do you see the difference between, or the similarities between Joseph and Christ? Do you see that? He is the lamb that is offered up, even though they did evil. That's us. Okay? Because we do evil, we need the lamb blood. We need the lamb's blood in order to be able to free us from those sins. And what did Joseph need? Joseph needed God to be able to separate what was right and what was wrong. He needed someone like Joseph to render the sins of his brothers and throw them out. God meant it for good in order to bring it about, as it is this day, to save many people alive. Verse 21, "Now therefore, do not be afraid. I will provide for you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spoke kindly to them. So Joseph dwelt in Egypt, he and his father's household, and Joseph lived 110 years. And Joseph saw Ephraim's children to the third generation. The children of Machir, the son of Manasseh, were also brought up on Joseph's knees. And Joseph said to his brethren, "I am dying, but God will surely visit you and bring you out of this land to the land of which he swore to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob." Then Joseph took an oath from the children of Israel, saying, "God will surely visit you, and you shall carry up my bones from here." So Joseph died, being 110 years old, and they embalmed him, and he was put in a coffin in Egypt. And that is the end of Genesis. And the beginning of a really, really great story as far as I'm concerned. Many of the questions in the book were answered in throughout the reading. I'll entertain any questions that you might have or comments. Henry?
One thing that I thought about was the Jews were making bricks constantly. It must have been a huge city. And I wonder, were they instrumental, which it doesn't matter, but I would wonder,
don't we all? Don't we all? I don't know how familiar you are with Egyptian history or not. I don't know if the Israelites had anything to do with that or not. According to history and archaeology, they are even older than that. But they can't be that much older. But those were stones. They were not made of brick. They were stone, and they were cut several miles, actually, along the Nile River, several miles. It did. And they used the Egyptians between the Egyptians and the Phoenicians were the earliest group of people to be able to sail successfully. And what's really weird is that the Nile River, which runs north and south, flows north. As far as I know, there's not another river in the world that flows north. But if you look at the topography of Africa, you see that right in the middle, it's really high. And so as the river springs from here, it flows down this way. It actually flows toward the Mediterranean Sea. And the prevailing winds were from the other direction. So they could actually float from south to north, and the winds would blow them from north to south, which enabled them to be able to traverse the Nile River. But, everybody wonders that, Henry. Not of brick, but of stone. They had their own masons. And if you've ever seen, some of you have even been there, I'm sure. Some of you world travelers have seen that. If it's made out of brick and straw, the wind and the water would have.
They
were constantly building something. Yeah, absolutely. Other questions or comments?
I thought the brothers were a little forgetful. Because when they first came to Egypt to buy the grain, Joseph told them you were the ones that you were the instrument of God to get me to Egypt. God intended for me to be in Egypt.
Yeah,
and so he had already told them that once.
Yeah, and I think I look at them as they travel for 40 years throughout, that they just kept doing the wrong thing all the time, always doing the wrong thing, and God would come in and reprimand them through Moses and through Aaron, but they just kept doing the wrong thing all the time. And I don't know whether this is DNA's right on down from this group of brothers through all the tribes that made up all the Israelites or not, but there's a 17-year period here between the time that they leave Canaan and go to Egypt as well. And so, yeah, they're forgetful. You know, everything's been going well for 17 years, then all of a sudden our protector is gone.
See it, the difference between a Godward mind and a self-centered mind. The reason those Israelites in the wilderness did not trust God was because they trusted in themselves. They were self-centered. And they didn't have the faith to trust God. The brothers there, Joseph's brothers, were self-centered individuals. And they were looking out for self. They were embittered against him for selfish reasons because of the dreams he had had. Right. And he was the only one among the bunch that had a Godward mind. He was able to forgive and overlook all that. But it's the same old story over and over. And it's,
yeah, and we're talking generations here. I think, don't we consider generation 25 years? Ben, is that right? I think about 25 years. You know, here's the patriarch, and 25 years later you have an adult that's probably married and having his own children. So we consider 25 to 30 years as a generation. So that was the whole... I mean, it don't take that long. If you look on a map, it doesn't take long to get from Egypt to Canaan. You know, they got an interstate highway now. And it took them 40 years. Well, there's a reason it took them 40 years. He didn't want them to get there. God did not want them to get there. He wanted them all dead. All the original sin. He wanted all of that to be long gone so that when they got to the area that they could cross the Jordan River and go into Canaan, it was a whole new group of people. Guys, I have really enjoyed the last 2 days of We're going to start, I believe, next Wednesday night, we're going to start the parables. And there will be 9 guys, Jimmy, as far as I know, 9 guys doing Sunday, Wednesday, another guy doing Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday, Wednesday, Sunday, Wednesday. And I get to do the last 2 again. So in baseball terms, I'm the closer. Thanks so much.